just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 681. I am Lisa Sheps, and today I'm joined by guest co-host Carl Gonzalez.
Hello, hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, folks, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air. We stream this puppy live at koop.org. Don't go away.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Summer love. It is Wednesday, August 10th. 2022. On the show today, we have Ground Floor Theater and their production of Anna and in the Tropics. And then later, we'll be joined by Hyde Park Theater and their production of Katie Bender's Judith. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, San Diego, Tampa, and points south. Stick around.
He ran by me, got my suit down.
Saved her life. She nearly drowned.
It's grease time. Grease is the word. Nothing on that? Got nothing, Carl?
Is the word. It's got move. It's got feeling.
So, Carl Gonzalez, welcome to co-hosting of Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. I'm excited to be here.
I'm thrilled that you're here. And we were talking before we went on the air. You and I met here in this very room, right?
In this very room. I was terrified of you.
I'm pretty scary. Well, not anymore. I want to take a moment to thank Kim Simpson, another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. It was a lovely repeat, and that was engineered and mastered by the incomparable Mr. Bob Daly, who I can see outside in the lobby on the other side. So he did a great job, and it's always great to have Bob here in the studio. We miss his show, Civil Rights and Wrongs, and I will just say it's wrong in a civil manner. Anyway, that's it. I'd also like to apologize for those of you who were expecting the podcast last week and you didn't get it. Timely behaviors as they are, the internet decided to stop working for an hour from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock last Wednesday. So our show never got recorded onto the archives. So unfortunately, we never made it onto the podcast, which is too bad because we had live music for the first time since the pandemic in the studio.
Oh, so, that is unfortunate.
I know. So Hedwig and the... So I will just say that was Hedwig and the Angry Inch, the Stage Austin, which is opening this weekend at the Dougherty Arts Center. So that's the one. So let me introduce the folks that are here before we continue our talk. We have Ben Bazan. Hi, Ben.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's nice that you're here again. You said you'd never come back, and here you are. Brianna Garcia.
Hello.
Hi. And Tony Knight.
Hey, Lisa and Carl.
Hello.
So, I played that piece from Grease. That's from the original Broadway cast back in 1972, because we lost Olivia Newton-John. Mm-hmm. And although she wasn't a Broadway person, she is so tied to Sandy and Grease that I just thought I'd start with that.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because I think Olivia Newton-John's version of Sandy might be some of the first experiences of musical theater for a lot of people. So,
Well, I will argue that it's not necessarily musical theater because it's a musical movie.
Well, musicals. How about that?
But you're absolutely
Thank you for
right.
the correction.
Is everybody here a Grease fan?
Yeah, absolutely. That was actually one of the first plays that my dad took me to go see, just a local high school production.
Wonderful. I actually am not a Grease fan. I've never seen the movie all the way through, but I did see that original cast back in the 70s, and that's the only time I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not the biggest Grease fan, but they have a couple of songs that just, you know, hopelessly devoted to you. You can't help
Classic.
But like it.
Yeah. I did love Olivia, and I like, yeah, and she'll be missed. She'll be missed. So we have so much to talk about and so little time to talk about it. I think I just need to start with what I think is going to be one of our more fun topics, which is our McAllen church called The Door. And they did an unauthorized version of Hamilton. Is everybody aware of this?
Very aware.
Very aware.
Yeah. Yeah. Brianna's got this look on her face like, no. So this evangelical church in McAllen, Texas, did an illegal performance of Hamilton in their church. And it's a mega church. And if you look at some of the photos from it, I mean, it's got a lot of production value.
Like, it looks legit.
Mm-hmm. Although they did play a little part of, I think it was the Schuyler Sisters or something. And it was the Schuyler Sisters. And they were a little pitchy, I have to say.
A little. Like, they were very pitchy.
They were very pitchy.
They also took some of the script, rewrote some lines to include the Bible, to include that, like,
right,
Hamilton was saved by Jesus.
Right,
at
right
the end.
Before It's Quiet Uptown.
Yep.
They blamed Philip Hamilton's death on the God, what's his name? Who's Hamilton? Hamilton's sin, and he got saved on stage, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so what's interesting about this is there's to do about it. And I read about it on the Onstage blog. And then there was, I forgot the man's name, but a very prominent journalist who also was very vocal about this. They had two performances, I think August 4th and 5th. Or maybe August 5th and 6th, I'm not really sure. But after the first performance, the Hamilton Company sent a cease and desist notice. They then got online and they said that they had permission, mm-hmm, from the Hamilton Company. And then, which is kind of true in a very, very weird way. But I want to read to you, in part, the Hamilton's statement on it. On Saturday, August 6th, we were made aware of an unauthorized staging of Hamilton by the Door Church in McAllen, Texas, that took place on Friday, August 5th, and their plans for additional performances. We issued a cease and desist letter for the unauthorized use of Hamilton's intellectual property, demanding the immediate removal of all videos and images from the previous productions from the internet, including YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and their own website and elsewhere. Then they went on to say they made a deal that they said that they could go ahead with their second performance as long as it was that nobody paid to come see it and that it was not on any media.
Which makes me personally really upset because, A, the agenda they were trying to push, and also, it's like, I understand if it was like a group of like fifth and sixth graders that got this money, be like, let them finish the show. But yeah. No, absolutely not. I completely disagree with that decision.
I agree as well. But they did go on to say that the Hamilton Company has the rights are not available to anybody, mm-hmm, outside of the Hamilton Company, and they've never issued any rights to anybody to do, mm-hmm, it. And it just seems so blatant. And the kind of the sad part of this whole thing, I will say also at the end of the Hamilton performance at the church, they did a sermon saying bad things about the queer community. So I don't know. There's a lot. Yeah, I'm with you, Carl. It's like, I don't think Hamilton should have let them go on with their second performance.
No. And especially with musical theater, it's like, come on. Like, no.
Yep. I mean, that goes, we were talking about the Bridgerton musical mm-hmm, with Netflix, which is also a blatant and they're going to court over it. But I will say this, the Hamilton Company has not, they said they're looking at it. So, I mean, there is possible that legal filings could happen.
Maybe, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I had read that Lin-Manuel maybe just said, left it up to like, okay, the lawyers will do their thing. So they might look into it.
Yeah, you just saw that today.
I just saw that today, yes.
And I must know, where did it, was it TikTok?
What? It was on actually Playbill.com.
Playbill.com. Playbill.com. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Yeah, that's it. Anybody else have anything? No? Okay. So let's see what's next on the agenda. Theater reform. This is something I wanted to talk about last week. And we've talked about this on the show before, but we're talking about the where theater is headed. Anne in the Tropics is a ground floor theater show. So this cast is aware of what ground floor theater is doing around how we're not operating in the old school version of the show must go on and all that. And this article written by Jesse Green, the New York Times, this was last week. This was on August 3rd that it came out, talks about the title of the article is shutting the door on the hard knock life. Anybody get it?
I get it.
Annie, little Annie there.
Little joke. Yeah.
But they talk about some of the things that happened to actors, technicians and things like that, and it's all said that it's part of the gig. We talk about Laura Benanti, who majorly injured herself on, I think it was My Fair Lady. I don't remember what the show was.
Gypsy, but
that
no.
might have been Gypsy anyway. But she had a major injury where she had to have spinal surgery.
Yeah.
And she, kind of the idea was she just sort of had to tough it up and do it. And that's sort of been the way we look at things. And certainly Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark 1.0, where everybody was getting injured. And that's just like part of the deal, part of being in theater. And so this article goes on to talk about a lot of the things that we are shifting our thoughts on those, and you get it a lot. And I'm old school, so I go back and forth on this. You get a lot of people that come in and start shows, and they don't do 8 shows a week because it's tough on a voice. And part of me wants to go, well, Carol Channing did 8 shows a week for so many years, and she didn't complain.
While you hold a cigarette in your hand, just exactly. yelling at the clouds.
Yes. But there's a lot of stuff going on. Like there's people are we use intimacy directors, and we used one on Anna in the Tropics, and it changes everything for the better, if you ask me. When before, if there was an intimate scene, the actors would be just said, go out there and do it without any.
Can I shout out the name?
Like Andy, that's cool. Yeah, go ahead.
No, Andy Grapko was one of the best things that's happened to Anna in the Tropics because it revolutionized how we worked. Actually, that was great because Ben and Brianna were part of that, and I think it made the whole scene and the whole process a lot more comfortable on all ends.
Yeah, I agree. It was such a great addition, and Andy really treated us with all the support and love and care and really just made it open for us to explore.
Yeah, so the use of intimacy directors are really, I think, a really good offshoot of all this. There was a lot of times that we didn't use them at all. Also, in many cases, child care is offered for actors during rehearsal and things like that. We're really trying to become a kinder, more gentler, what's the word?
Community?
Profession. Oh. Or community.
Profession, yeah.
So, I mean, when one of these things were always part of like paying your dues, and now... We don't have to do that. So, Tony, do you remember the times, because we're all of a certain age, where we just did things without any kind of, you didn't question.
Oh,
so if the director says, you know what, I know we were supposed to end rehearsal 15 minutes ago, but we're going to stay for another hour, and you had to say what?
You had to say, yes, please, and I'll stay too if you want me to.
Exactly. And that's not happening anymore. I think these are good problems. And tangential to this, but along the same line, there has been the Black Theater United has joined in with Alexander Consulting to offer EDI training, online EDI training specifically for the theater industry.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. And it's going to be available throughout the theater industry sometime in 2023. So this is another thing that happened. It's tangential and part and parcel, but not exactly the same, of this new just way of looking at theater. But we're now also, since George Floyd's murder and the We See You White Theater list of demands. We are, those of us who are white and running theaters, really looking at how we run theater and how we work with a diverse population and trying to really lift people up to get them in the, not only in the public-facing-ish places like performers, but also directors, producers, stage managers, everybody trying to get a much more diverse and, again, better theater community.
Exactly. And I think that's something that a lot of people aren't realizing until now. It's not just about actors of color, directors of color. It's producers of color. It's playwrights of color. It's a board, a theater board of color, mm-hmm. and of of LGBTQIA2+ people. It needs that.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm for one very happy about it. But listen to some of the people who are on the board of Black Theater United: La Chance, Kenny Leone, Norm Lewis, Audra McDonald, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Wendell Pierce, Billy Porter, Anna Devere Smith, Lilius White, Natasha Yvette Williams, Vanessa Williams. I mean, it's just
a list. Wow. Right there.
That is an incredible list. So I think it's all pretty cool. I'm very excited and I'm very encouraged about where theater is going.
I think this is much needed. It should have happened. We should have never had this problem, but that's a different story for a different time.
Yeah. Well, that's the patriarchy, the white patriarchy should never have happened, but there it is. We got to run, but I wanted to say, speaking along the same lines, Lilius White is taking over for...
I am so excited. I have to see that.
Yeah, so what are we talking about?
What? Hadestown.
Yes, I know. Okay. I just keep forgetting the name of the character, and I was hoping you'd...
Hermes.
Hermes! Yeah. Thank you for Andre DeShields. Well, Andre DeShields left a while ago. This will make the first female-identifying actor to play that role, and it's really cool.
I think it's, again, I've said this so many times, I feel, but that's awesome. And I think they're going to be incredible.
Right. She was just recently Mama Morton in Chicago, but she's also done Dreamgirls, Once on This Island, Cats, How to Succeed in Business. And she won the Tony Award for The Life and a Tony nomination for Fela. And, you know, I was just thinking about Fela. That's something that should come back.
I think so.
Yeah, what a wonderful thing. So anyway, that's going to be very exciting. Hadestown is coming here to Austin. And Rachel Chafkin, who directed the show, talked about the tour company and said they are equally as good. And if Rachel Chafkin says it, I believe it. She's a goddess, if you ask me. But that's just if you ask me. And our final thing is 1776 is coming back to Broadway, yet with a little spin. I think we've talked about it. I think Nicole and I have talked about it. But this is an all-female cast.
That's awesome. I think when you brought it up earlier before we went on air, I hadn't even heard about it. So that makes me really excited, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, so it's going to be the American Airlines musical. Previews are set to start September 16th, if my computer would stop doing that, and it has an opening night of August 6th. It had a run at the American Repertory Theater, which is Diane Paulus, and she is named as co-director along with Jeffrey Page. I'm not sure of, I don't know the actor. I'm going to try to come up with her name. Crystal Lucas Perry is playing John Adams, and she is a person of color. And the picture that I'm now showing the people here in the studio looks pretty amazing.
That looks incredible. Yeah.
And I love 1776, but it is, I when I look at watch the movie, which I don't think I've ever seen it live on stage. I think
I've only ever seen the movie, and I wasn't the biggest fan of it. But
yeah. Well, I liked it. I liked the music from it. It does sort of smack of those lies that we've been told in history for years and years and years. But it's beautiful. But one of the things I always said is, I go, there's really one female character, two female characters in the whole piece, and I was like. But now this sort of takes that cringeworthy all male kind of thing out of it, and I think it's going to be interesting.
Maybe this will allow like a female identifying all production of Assassins or something, which would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm all for
it. If it hasn't been done yet.
Let's do that. Okay. So we're going to take a break. We're going to hear a song, one of my favorites from 1776. It's kind of a downer, but I just love it. It's really beautiful. It's Mama Look Sharp. We will be right back.
Mama, hey, Mama, come look.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Carl Gonzalez.
Hello.
You can also check us out on the interweb at koop.org. We also podcast this on normal days at offstageonair.com. You know, I did want to say that I wanted to talk about Julie Benko, who was the standby for Beanie Feldstein in Funny Girl. She went on for Beanie, I think it was like 28 times. I thought it was like going to be a lot more than that because Beanie was out of the show so many. But she's now doing, I think, a six-week period where it is her show before Lea Michele takes over in September. And just go at offstageonair.com is a link to a New York Times article which talks all about it. I did see her, and she was like very excited. She was in the New York Times. Well, that's the article, but it was like the front page of the arts section. And she went to a newsstand to pick up the papers. And she like told the newsstand guy, said, "Hey, look at this," and showed a picture. And the guy goes, "Oh, yeah." And she goes, no, this is me. And he goes, "Oh, okay." I just love that. Anyway, I would suggest go to offstageonair.com and click on the link about her. It's just pretty amazing. So let's switch gears and let's talk about let's talk about Ground Floor Theater's production of Anna in the Tropics. And Carl's going to take his co-host hat off and put on his director hat because Carl Gonzalez is the director of this piece. Hello.
I'm happy to be here. I'm brand new. I haven't been the I just realized they didn't see me take off my figurative hat and then put on the other one. So I'm like thinking I'm making a cute joke.
And he didn't even take off his hat because he's wearing a Chicago Bulls cap right now.
I am one of my lucky hats.
And we also have three of the performers here. We have Ben Bazan.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Ben. We have Brianna Garcia.
Hola.
And we have Tony Knight.
Hi there.
So, Carl, tell us about Anna in the Tropics. What is this show? Who wrote it?
It's this new up-and-coming playwright named Nilo Cruz. That is a complete lie. He won the Pulitzer in 2003 for this show. It is easily one of the most beautiful works, if not the most beautiful work that I've ever directed. It's about a Cuban cigar factory in Tampa. And back in the 1920s, they had these people called lectores who would come and read them stories. Well, this lector is reading the story of Anna Karenina, or Anna Karenina. And we start to see that the stories that the lector speaks or says, I wish I could say this better, but it always actually gets me emotional because it's so beautiful. We start to see the characters' lives imitate the story.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And, Nilo Cruz's words are, as I've been saying lately, ad nauseum is like butter.
Butter.
It's taken from Tolstoy, which is like butter as well. But let's talk about, so Ben, what character do you play?
I play the lector, Juan Julian Rios.
Yeah.
A man from Cuba trying to make it in this world as a lector, trying to salvage this job that slowly might be slipping away.
Yeah, so part of the narrative of this show is progress. Mm-hmm. And is that good or bad, or pluses and minuses of that? Mm-hmm. Brianna, tell us about your character.
Yeah, so I play Conchita. She is the daughter of the cigar factory's owner. Well, yeah. And so she grew up there, and her whole life is transformed when the lector comes and begins to read the story of Anna Karenina.
It's just fascinating how, just by happenstance, what's going on in this family-run cigar factory just mirrors what happens at Anna Karenina. Tony, who are you playing?
I play Ophelia. She's the matriarch of the Alcalar family and one of the owners of the cigar factory.
and the mother of Conchita and Marela, and just one of the driving forces behind bringing the Lector to the factory.
So because this is done at Ground Floor Theater, I have some insight into what it is. And there's just so many things about the production process that have been really fun in this. Can y'all talk a little bit about what this has been like, some of the things that happened? Like, we started right off the top of the bat learning how to roll cigars.
That was amazing.
Tell folks about it.
Well, Ground Floor brought in a master Cuban cigar roller.
Ibrahim Ruiz.
Exactly. And he was so fantastic. And really, first of all, he showed us how he did it, which was incredible. And then took like a lot of time and patience to individually show each of us who has to roll a cigar on stage, like what the various steps were and how to do it. And even though I think it takes years to actually become a master cigar roller, you know, we each produced a cigar that could be smoked.
I'm going to take issue. I think you all are master cigar rollers.
And Tony, those cigars, my boyfriend smoked the one I rolled and he said it was amazing. So they...
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. He Ibrahim brought these big sheets of tobacco that he gets from Cuba, and it was just amazing in terms of what it does. So let's hear some of the show, right? Let's let some of these actors talk about. We're gonna do a couple of very short monologues. Why don't we start with the Lector himself, Juan Julian? Does somebody want to set up this monologue?
Yeah, so this monologue that I will share with you all is kind of like the intro of the story of Ana Karenina. This is the first thing that the workers start to hear after the Lector has arrived into this factory.
Wonderful. Okay, this is Ben Bazan doing a scene from Ground Floor Theater's production of Ana in the Tropics.
Looking at him, Ana Karenina felt a physical humiliation and could not say another word. Her beloved felt what a killer must feel when he looks at the body he has deprived of life. The body he had deprived of life was their love, the beginning of their love. There was something dreadful and revolting in the recollection of what had been paid for by this awful price of shame. The shame Ana sensed from their spiritual nakedness destroyed her and affected him. But in spite of the killer's horror when he faces the body of his victim, the killer must cut the body to pieces and conceal it. And he must make use of what he has gained by his crime. And with the same fury and passion as the killer throws himself upon the body and drags it and cuts it, he covered her face and shoulders with kisses. Yes, these kisses are what have been bought by my shame. That's all for today from Ana Karenina.
Well, awesome. That's just all for today, but people can hear more later if they want.
I'd like to hear more.
Well, let's just run right next to, we're going to hear a little bit from all three of the characters that are here, and I want to make sure we have time to do it because time is limited. Tony, you play Ophelia, and can you tell us what monologue you're going to do or lead into it?
I don't know that it needs a lot. She's reminiscing at a party about her youth.
Okay. She's had a little bit to drink as well.
She may have had a tipple.
She may be a little tipsy. Okay, this is Tony Knight doing a monologue from Ground Floor Theater's Ana in the Tropics.
Señores, I have a confession to make. When I was 17, and that was yesterday, I was chosen to pose for a cigar brand that was called Aida, like the opera. And of course, just the thought of my face on a cigar ring and in all those men's hands and lips, my mother was scandalized. You see, we weren't cigar people. We were in the guayaba jelly business. And so when she forbid me to pose for the label, I told her that I wanted to see my face on a can of mermelada de guayaba. It was only fair. So they dressed me up in a red dress with a red carnation behind my ear, and they had me looking lovely sitting on a hammock with a parrot by my side.
Awesome. Wonderful. That just, again, just the lovely buttery language. Right. And Tony's exquisite way of bringing that to life, and it's fun. That monologue is one of my favorites. Of course, it's part of the party scene, and we got a lot of party feelings around it. And then finally, Brianna, tell us about what you're going to be doing with Conchita.
So in this section, Conchita is just sharing a story with the lector about a tradition.
So okay. Well, this is Brianna Garcia doing a monologue from Ground Floor Theaters, Anna in the Tropics.
I knew a fellow from New London. He was so modest and reserved. So shy was this boy that when he expressed any sort of feeling, he would excuse himself. So one day, I gave him a braid that I had cut from my hair, and I told him to bury it under a tree. I explained to him that back on the island, most women would cut their hair once a year on the 2nd of February when the trees were pruned for the feast of St. Candelaria. I told him that the women would offer their hair to the earth and to the trees for the greenery and fruits to come. And I gave him my little braid in a box, and I told him to choose a tree in the park. And the boy looked at me with a strange face and said that he would feel embarrassed digging a hole in the middle of the park in front of everybody. And that is when I took my braid back, I took a shovel, I dug a hole, and I put him to shame. From then on, he never talked to me again. So he's the only person from New England that I've met.
So that's great. What we're missing here is the lovely dialogue between people, and it's
I know
it's really lovely, and I would encourage folks to. In our last little bit of time, less than a minute on this, I want you to talk about. We have some of the other things, like who did, and tell us about the set. There is original music. Can you talk a little bit about that stuff?
Sure. First, huge shout out to my stage manager and assistant director, Remy and Lacey, because without them, I would be completely lost.
Remy Joslin, Lacey Cannon Gonzalez. Yes.
Yes, right. Snaps to them. We have live music almost every night by Eric Flores. The set design is by Maggie Adamendiaz. Our costumes, Desiree Humphreys, our lights, Jacqueline
Sindelar.
I'm sorry if I'm our props, CB Goodman. And just this is truly a miracle team working on this show. I'm so sorry if I'm forgetting anyone off the top of my head.
Yeah, I just want to say that the set is gorgeous. We had scene painters coming in. There's a lovely. What's that called?
Mural.
Mural, thank you.
This beautiful mural. Oh, my
beautiful
God.
Beautiful mural that's hand-painted. And it's the set, along with the lighting, along with Nilo Cruz's words, are like extra butter.
It was like good melted butter. European that good butter. Stuff right there.
All right. Well, Carl, when does the show run?
What? The show runs August 12th through the 27th.
And where can folks go to get more information?
Groundfloortheater.org/Anna.
Great. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Best of luck to all of us on opening night this coming Friday.
So close.
And can't wait to see the show.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, that was Carl Gonzalez, Tony Knight, Brianna Garcia, and Ben Bazan of Ground Floor Theater's production of Anna in the Tropics, August 12th through 27th. For more information, groundfloortheater.org. And we are going to go out with a song called Cigars.
Take the cigar.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage. Oops, I pulled the wrong lever. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP. I'm Lisa, and you are?
Carl Gonzalez.
Wonderful. Let's take a little moment to talk about what's going on locally.
Yes.
And then we'll go on to our next guests. So first of all, I want to talk about Zach's. They're doing The Inheritance, part one. Are you familiar with The Inheritance?
A little bit. I know a little bit about it, but I have yet to see or read it. So
it's a. I haven't either. It was on Broadway 2019, so it's a very new thing. It deals with the queer community. It won the Tony for Best Play. It looks pretty good. Zach is doing it in two parts, which I don't know how I feel about that part of it. But that's it.
So are they doing like one part this season, another part next, or
yeah, they're closing out this season with part one and they're opening next season with part two.
I actually don't hate that.
What?
That's interesting. I'm intrigued.
More information, zachtheater.org. I will say that part one, I'm just going to give you some dates. August 10th through September 4th. And then they have an ASL interpreted. There's a Pride night. There's a champagne opening. Blah, blah, snickerty, blah. That's it. And then also Paper Chairs is doing something very interesting called A Bloody Wedding.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I'll just read this. Lorca was born and murdered in rural Andalusia on the onset of the Spanish Civil War. This thing didn't do the whole... I don't know what the next word is because it's not on my screen. It looks like it takes two stages. One of them has already happened, and it was some kind of virtual thing. Is anybody familiar?
Yeah. I'm
well, hold on just a second. Let's talk to Madge Darlington. You're working on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, tell people better than me what it is.
So it's an adaptation by Elizabeth mm-hmm. Doss of Lorca's Blood Wedding. And last week, I wasn't there last week because I was busy opening Judith.
But right, which we're just about to talk about.
Yes, they invited me into the process this week. And so we're at the Crash Box and we're kind of doing partly a sit-down reading, partly a stage reading, and Liz is making changes to the script. And,
wonderful.
And, yeah.
Folks can get more information at paperchairs.com. And the piece that happens on Crash at the Crash Box is the 13th at 7:30 and the 12th.
Yeah.
This Friday and Saturday. At the Crash Box, which everybody knows is the home of the Rude Mex, of which Madge Darlington is one of the primary people. And finally, locally, I just want to remind folks that still playing is, I just have my list here, because we're starting to get back into theater, guys.
Yay.
Just wonderful. Previews of Departing Attractions, that is Austin Playhouse, which I went to see. Has anybody else seen it?
Not yet.
It's a lovely piece, and it's in their new home, so it's worthwhile going and supporting Austin Playhouse as they go to the new home. Hedwig and the Angry Inch is opening this weekend. That's the stage Austin. Judith, as we're going to talk about, is at Hyde Park Theater. Pet Dick, Jarrett Productions online piece is still going. Entanglement at the Master George Theater. And I realized that in my GFTV video, I said it was at the Darty, and it's not. Newsies is still playing out at the park, and of course Sunflower is still playing out at the
Scottish Rite.
Thank you. I don't know what I would do without all of you guys. So we're going to take a little moment before we go into our next guest, and we'll listen to a little bit of Newsies, which is still playing out in the park. This is a song called That's Rich. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and
Carl Gonzalez.
We've had such a great time. What a great talking to the cast of Anna in the Tropics, Ben Bazan, Brianna Garcia, and Tony Knight. And we're just going to continue the conversations on. Yes.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. We have folks from, where's my script? I lost it. Folks from Hyde Park Theaters. Judith, written by Katie Bender. And we're lucky enough to have the playwright themselves here. Katie Bender, hi.
Hi, how are you?
And we have the director, Madge Darlington.
Hello.
Nice. You weren't going to say hello. You have to say hello.
Thank you for having us.
And then the performer, and it is a one-hander, as we say in the business,
yes.
Taylor Flanagan.
But I use both hands.
You can't. It's a one-hander.
Oh, no. I've been breaking the rules. Change the blocking.
So, Katie, tell us about this show. What is it?
Judith is, it's a solo play. It is a sort of an imagined retelling of the early history of William Shakespeare.
I've heard of him.
Yes, good. Yeah, yeah.
That's helpful, but not necessary.
Helpful, but not necessary.
Which is good, because I don't know anything about him.
So it follows sort of the thing that's fun is people know the least about William Shakespeare's early years. And so this is very much an imagined, how did he come to London? How did it all begin? And it came out of, I wrote it during the pandemic. And so it is very, very much my love letter to what is possible in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I was reading a lot of Virginia Woolf at the time. And also we were in pandemic. And so it is a lot, the undercurrent is about sort of how we value people and fail to really see each other in a capitalist society, though that's the undercurrent.
Yeah.
So when I listen to the title, just the title Judith, that does not scream Shakespeare to me. Can you tell us about the title and how it fits in with the piece?
Yeah. So in A Room of One's Own, Virginia Woolf sort of has this imagined history. What if Shakespeare's sister had also been a poet, had also been, the potential for having these many great stories. And so Virginia Woolf sort of writes out what that would have been like. And Virginia Woolf's sister is named Judith. So that's where that the title comes from.
That is great. And Taylor, just tell us about what you know of the character from your point of view.
Oh, boy. So I mean, that's a complicated question. It's a more complicated question than you'd think, because I think that one of the things that happens with the show is that Judith sort of immerses herself into this new world of London and theater and like the race to the top. And she does, on stage, she gets a little bit lost in these other characters at times, but also to herself, she gets a little bit lost in terms of like, what is the spark inside me that is actually me? So that's actually a hard question.
Okay, fair enough. People can go and figure it out for themselves. So I'm curious, on the poster, it features a photograph of you, mm-hmm. And you are wearing a mustache.
Yes.
So we know in Shakespeare's time, there were no women in Shakespeare's companies and all the men played all roles.
Right.
Is this gender bending feel, is it the same kind? And I actually don't like the word gender bending, but the swapping of masculine versus feminine, is that part of this?
Yeah, I would definitely say that it's still written in the context of people not having the language that we do now to talk about a lot of things, but there is that component of like the parts we play for each other and for ourselves, like what are the parts that are genuine and what are the parts that are for society only and what are the parts that are for our people? You know, like there's so many layers within the show about identity, about costume, and about the politics of costume wearing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume, well, maybe less so back in the day because it was underground a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly in today's world. Yeah. Madge, as a director, how did you approach this piece?
Oh, I had so much fun with this piece. It's really, really well written. And, you know, they say 80% of directing is casting, and I felt great casting Taylor.
Taylor's okay.
Yeah. And I'm also teaching a class right now on performing LGBTQ+ at UT.
Oh my, didn't know that.
It's about the third time I've taught it. And anyway, it was really great to be teaching that class while working on this play, because it does it does focus so much on gender and sexuality and making discoveries about gender and sexuality. And I love Shakespeare. I got my start with Shakespeare at Wynedale, and where I got to play a lot of men on stage. Mm-hmm. And even before I was out, was playing Falstaff. And
how fun is
putting
that?
On a, you know, a beard and wooing women on stage and going, huh, I kind of like this. You know,
I played Falstaff too.
I know. I heard that this week that you'd also played Falstaff in Merry Wives.
In Merry Wives.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and this isn't specific to this show, but when you look at Shakespeare's day and all the actors were men, and nowadays there's, especially in education, they're the women outnumber the men in so many of these institutions. When you mm-hmm. look at young Shakespeare, it's a constant barrage of female identified actors playing male roles.
Yeah. If you want to give equal opportunities, you have to have cross gender casting.
Yeah, which I think is great and awesome.
Yeah.
All of that thing. We were talking earlier before y'all came on. There's a 1776 coming to Broadway with an all-female cast. So.
Well, and then we need more Katie Benders who are going, hey, how about the female perspective? The not, like, you know, actually bringing in new works that let people explore all of these awesome questions and identities and characters, but not having to do it through a male lens specifically.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of that, Katie, this is, I'm guessing since you wrote this during the pandemic, this is the first time it's getting a production.
Yeah, this process has been amazing, and it's the first time this has happened in my career as a playwright where I was commissioned to write a thing. I freaked out for about 6 months, and then I wrote a thing, and then I was able to develop it with the Hyde Park Writers Group and Megan Thornton, and then we did a workshop. Madge and I did a workshop of it back in September with the woman who commissioned it from me, and then Ken loved it, and 9 months later decided to do a production. So really, that is such a short lifespan from initial idea to full production, and it has been a pleasure and fun and easy, which is such a delight.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't realize it was a commissioned piece. Can you share who commissioned it?
It was commissioned by a woman named Liv Scanlon, who lives in Worcester, Massachusetts.
And I'm just going to take a little tangent here. Had you done commissioned project before? And then the follow-up to that is... What's that? I mean, you said you freaked out a little bit. I would totally freak out. I'd just love to hear it from your perspective, that process.
I have worked on commissions before, and I really like them. This one was particular because Liv is primarily a director and producer, but wanted to act and knew that she wanted to play a young Shakespeare, and we had sort of had artistic crushes on each other for about 5 or 6 years, and in the middle of the pandemic, she had sold her company, and she had a chunk of money and said, hey, as kind of a investment in my future, would you write this piece? That was kind of the initial piece. And then there's always this conversation that happens, which is like, okay, you've been dreaming about this in your brain, on your body for many years now, and now I'm going to take it and I'm going to ruin everything you dreamed of. I promise there's no way I could write the thing that you have imagined for yourself. But what I wrote actually became my own, and now it feels, you know, now it feels like very much a shared project.
I love that. Did she get to play it in any way, shape, or fortune as of this moment?
We'll do a workshop of it in March in Worcester, and she was here for the workshop last September.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I want to, in our last 5 minutes, I'm going to put you on the spot, but don't feel free to say no because we did not talk about this ahead of time. Or can you do a little, like, 1 or 2 minute piece? And if no was a very, because I'll tell my audience, we did not speak about this ahead of time.
I would do.
But
I wish you'd been there.
Oh, okay. Great. Yep. So. until at some point, I will stop.
You'll just stop. In about, you know, give it about a minute. Do you need to set it up at all?
This is right at the top. So.
Okay, great.
All right.
Well, great. This is Taylor Flanagan doing the very beginning of Katie Benders. I just love Judith. done by Hyde Park Theater.
God, I wish you'd been there. The pageant at Castle Kenilworth. I shouldn't have been, but when Father said the Queen herself was coming for the Midsummer Festival and the guildsmen putting up a show, well, I begged and pleaded and pleaded and begged, but got nowhere with Father. Till the day of. And William feeling unwell, and so, you'll never guess. I threw on his hat and cloak and boots and walked out the door by Father's side as though I was William. Father didn't even notice. And there I stood amongst the crowd and... Wait, I'll act it out for you. Okay, you be the queen, and you're on the raised dais looking down on the grounds, and you lot are all the townspeople gathered around down here. This is the courtyard, and over here is a nice sloping hill. You all are the river. You can make river hands if you like. And the story is the defeat of the Danes by the women. They play it every Shrove Tuesday and must have thought it would please Her Majesty. Okay, so men come in as women pretending to be men. So skirts and armor, but they're doing the ladies' walk and ladies' hands. Okay, and then the Danes invade. The men are killed. All is lost. Are you following all this? Okay, suddenly, total surprise, the women rise up. They attack. They fight back. Attack! Women to the ramparts! Dead! Super dead! Bah! Right at the climax, just as the sun is about to set, a bugle call is heard out on the river. A dolphin rises from the waves. A mermaid rides astride her. Gorgeous. Hair in the wind. And yes, of course, it's just an old float with a scaffold covered in garlands. And yes, it's Goldenham the barkeep, astride and singing, his voice more ham than golden. And even at 40 meters, you can see his nose glows purple from drink. But somehow, it is both. Both sea creature and canoe, ethereal song and tavern croak. The great mythical mermaid and our own Goldenham. And the sun completes the action, dipping into the river, and the woods are filled with candles as though the fairies of old had graced the performance. How do you like that? To be both. It is a kind of magic.
That's beautiful. Who wrote that? It's so lovely. Right? Now, you guys are already open, correct?
Yes.
How long do you play?
It's 5 weeks. Goes till September 3rd. It's Thursday through Saturday nights.
Great. At Hyde Park Theater. Yes. I have heard, I was going to go last week, but didn't, and I'm definitely going to come see it. But I have heard nothing but wonderful things about it, I have to tell you.
Audience has been so lovely and supportive. Every night they've stayed after and chatted and been just like really enthusiastic.
Yeah. I've heard great things. Best of luck to... where should folks go for more information?
Oh, the Hyde Park Theater website.
Which is hydeparktheater.org. Yes. Great. Well, best of luck with the rest of the run.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy to have y'all back here at Offstage and on the Air.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks for having us, Lisa.
Wonderful.
Our pleasure.
That was Taylor Flanagan, Madge Darlington, and Katie Bender of Hyde Park Theater's production of Judith, written by Katie Bender. You can get more information at hydeparktheater.org. And I chose to go out. I always try to find something. This one was... Well, this is called the Pants Song from Be More Chill.
Be More Chill.
When you love somebody, you put your pants on.
Okay, that was so much fun. I enjoyed them.
Yeah, they were incredible.
Yep. By the way, I should tell you, we're back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air on Co-op. And Carl, thank you so much for coming and playing with me today.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. I definitely want to come back if you'll have me back.
Well, I want to have you back next week if you're available. So that's it. We'll do a shout out to Nicole, who is still up in the Northeast in New York, just sitting out at the beach with her dangling her toes in the water. Which is not completely
true. I was like,
I
don't think that's true, but...
No, she's doing some family stuff. She's very busy, but she did tell me that she does take the odd time for walks on the beach and things like that. So if you have to be busy and dealing with family issues, that's the way to do it.
take a little time for yourself. You know, you have to.
Yeah, she does. So we'll look forward to having Nicole back in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, I'm very jealous of her being in the Northeast.
Very jealous.
You know, I love me some Northeast. Hold on, I'm queuing up at the same time I engineer my own show. So coming up next is John Hoffner with Austin Common Radio. He's there trying to steal his own microphone all by himself. John, what's on your show this week?
Well, yet one more week of solar and women. This is episode 4. Really exciting. We've found some really cool women in the solar world. So this is episode 4. Last one. Next week, we're going to be live. We're going to have fun, just Yay. Like you.
Lovely. We're looking forward to that. Yeah. I do enjoy listening to the show when I drive away, and I learn so much from these incredible women in solar. It's so important.
And I learn a lot from your show with Carl here. And how much fun is that?
We have a good time. We have just about 1 minute left. I'm going to look and see if there's anything from our last thing. I do want to tell folks there's a memoir that Cheetah Rivera is writing. It's going to come out. And check out Ohio State Murders with Audra McDonald. Do you know who Audra Lindley is?
Is actually one of my favorites. A little better than Audra McDonald, but I don't tell Audra McDonald that to her face when we're having brunch on Sundays.
I had the honor of working with Audra Lindley and her husband at the time, James Whitmore, when I was the production stage manager of a pre-Broadway show called In the Sweet By and By, which never made it to Broadway.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. I thought you made up Audra Lindley, and I was just riffing off of that.
Audra Lindley is Mrs. Roper.
Wow, okay. Well, there we go.
So, yeah, she was an actual real person. But anyway, check out, and there'll be a link to it at offstageonair.com, to the Ohio State Murders. In the meantime, we're going to go away listening to 13, which is the movie of Jason Robert Brown's 13, is coming out on Netflix in the next week or two. Part of the cast album is available. And are you familiar with 13?
I know some of it, but I'm familiar with Jason Robert Brown more. So,
well, 13 is about a 13-year-old.